Okay, so let's get started. This is the fourth lecture in a series of six, and we are moving forward, and we've arrived at the Reformation and the Civil War, 1485 to 1688. Okay, so only 200 years today, a very short period. So, first of all, making sure you understand the terms. So, Reformation, on dit en français la réforme avec un R majuscule. That is to say, the invention of the Protestant religion, Protestantism. Why is this important? A new religion. The reason it's important is because, as I mentioned to you last week, religion and politics are very, very close together at this time. At this time, in England, of course, you have the king, who is very powerful, but also the church, the Catholic Church, is extremely powerful at the beginning of this period. Okay, so let's move right ahead. I have put on my blog the recordings of the previous classes. If I talk too fast, you can listen to them again. Is that somebody trying to get in and not making much noise about it? It might be. And of course, secondly, the Civil War. Civil wars, of course, are not very common, fortunately. And what is special about a civil war is very different from an international war. If you have an international war, very often, the city, especially at this time, the citizens have a choice. The citizens have a choice to be interested or not. When you have a civil war, everybody is interested. Because the king's army arrives in your town. Are you supporting the king or opposing the king? You have to choose now. Yeah, it's a very, very political situation. Okay, so let's move. Go. J'ai besoin de silence. Now here is a list of the kings before the Civil War. Now, I am not interested in the personal. I'm not really interested in the personality of the different kings, on who they went to bed with, etc. You can watch the Tudors if you want to know that. What we want to look at is the politics of it. The first thing to notice about them is the time. That is to say that Mary is only 5 years. Edward is only 6 years, only 5 years, 50 years. Yeah, so very, very different. You have two monarchs who do not reign very long, and Lady Jane Grey is queen for a few days. What happens to her after a few days? Yeah, difficult job at the time. Okay, so the beginning of this story is the power of the church. The church is extremely powerful. So, for example, the church is extremely rich. It's a bit like Microsoft. It's an international company with an enormous amount of land, gold in every country. The church is an economic power. Secondly, the church is like an international state. So in England, if you murder somebody, then you go to the king's court and the king's justice decides. But for many crimes, there are also church courts. Yeah, so you have two sets of tribunals, the king's tribunals and the church tribunals. Yeah? And so the church is as rich as the king. The church has its own tribunals parallel to the king's on slightly different questions. The church can make a lot of money because everybody needs the church. You need to be baptized, you need to have confession, you need to be buried. This is a time when everybody believes. Yeah, that's different. It's not really an option. Everybody believes. The church is also a form of mass media. Every Sunday in church, the priest will say, "This is what is important, listen to me." And very often this is political. So the church will say, in every church they will say, "You must respect the king. The king has decided on a war, the king is right or not." Yeah? So it's very political. Remember, you don't have Facebook, yeah? No Facebook, just the church. And the church So the church, tremendously powerful. Very often the king and the church work together. Very often. They are big friends. For example, when they need a new bishop or a new archbishop, especially the top, the archbishop, the king will help choose the archbishop. The king will phone the Pope and say, I think that Bill should be the new archbishop. And the Pope will say, oh, okay. Yeah, that's about the very cooperation. But when the king and the church are in conflict, it can get very very explosive. And that what is what is going to happen. Oh, one more thing I forgot. The church collects taxes. Very taximi, example. Okay, taxes. So, for so if you're an ordinary English person, you must pay money to the king, but you must also pay to the church. The church taxes. So, you know, this is money, power. This is big things. The other reason that the king and the secular powers, they need the church, because the church are the people who know how to read and write. Yeah? If you're a powerful landowner, you have a lot of land and a lot of economic problems, you need the priests, because they can read and write and calculate and help you. Yeah, the church is like la fonction publique de l'époque, l'église aussi. Yeah. So the question of the power of the church is not only a question of theology. It's a question of bureaucracy, money, power, negotiation, etc. Religion is politics. Now, in this world, technology is gradually rising and becoming tremendously important. Technology. For example, in 1477, the first book in English. La première imprimerie en anglais. This is tremendously important, because before 1477, if you want a book, you must copy it from another book. It takes a long time. After 1477, one book, another book. So it's an absolute revolution in technology that makes books possible. And it is William Caxton, C-A-X-T-O-N, who is the first person to publish in England. He's not the first in Europe, Caxton, C-A-X-T-O-N. He's not the first person in Europe. In Germany, they are ahead. The first are in Germany. This is tremendous. The invention of printing will transform the world, every section of the world. For example, agriculture. Before Caxton, it's almost impossible to get a book. Books are extremely expensive, because you must copy them. And so, if you have an agricultural problem, what shall I do about this problem? Say, oh, well, I'll go and see the oldest person in the village. Oh, tell me what you should do. Oh, well, you need a magician. Yes, traditional knowledge, which was sometimes good and sometimes bad. But after Caxton, then you get books, for example, 1523, the Book of Husbandry, a manuel de comment élever les animaux. So even agriculture, which is not the most technological, is completely transformed by the arrival of books, or at least transformed by the arrival of books. Okay, so we have a powerful church and rising agriculture, rising commerce. And what will happen little by little is that the new classes, the commercial classes, who are making money from commerce with Indonesia, with Holland, ça s'appelle pas l'Indonésie à l'époque, they will come into conflict with the church. Because the church is tradition, taxes, and also economic competition. The church collects taxes, but the church does not pay taxes. So, for example, if you have a big farm with a lot of sheep and you want to make money selling the sheep, well, the church has a big farm with a lot of sheep, but they don't pay any taxes. So you don't like the church anymore. Yeah. So, at the same time, there is a theological challenge to the Catholic Church. And here is the... Il va trop souvent à McDo, ce gars, non? Here is the leader, Martin Luther, a German guy, who demands changes. And in particular, Martin Luther says the Pope should not be boss. God is the boss, and God can talk directly to us. We don't need the Pope. Now, this is a dangerous thing to say at the time, yeah? But why does he say this? So, in fact, Martin Luther will challenge the Pope. He will challenge the Catholic tradition. Now, this is not new. There have been many revolts against the Catholic Church. We saw in England the Wycliffe people who translated the Bible into English. They were destroyed. In France, the Cathars, who had a particular idea, nous sommes tous des prêtres, disait-il, they were destroyed. In Bohemia, Prague, the Hussites, who said, priests are not so important, we are all kind of equal, they were destroyed. So what is important about Martin Luther is not that it was the first revolt. What is important is that he was successful and the others were not successful. So the question we have to ask, and I always say that the only interesting question in history is why, the question we have to ask is, why was he successful? And the reason he was successful was the new commercial classes liked this idea. They liked the idea that individuals can talk to God and listen to God. Everybody has an individual relationship with God. Because this is the commercial classes are the beginnings of capitalism. And capitalism is based on the individual, entrepreneur, novelty and individuality. The old system of feudalism, land, the aristocracy, yeah, your position in society is because of your parents and your blood. So a very stable system, no change. The commercial classes are not so interested in that old hierarchy. The commercial classes, no, we want money to be the centre, not tradition. And so this will lead to the clash. Now, the Protestant Reformation will bring a lot of new ideas, new religious ideas. I cannot explain them all. There are many theologians, Martin Luther, Calvin, and some others as well, and they all have some differences, but these, I think, are the most important new ideas of Protestantism. Not all Protestants have all these ideas, but these are typical Protestant ideas. So, the first one, against corruption in the church. And it's true that the church could be very corrupt. I explained to you last week how this worked, that you had a piece of paper. You have a piece of paper. This piece of paper will reduce by 100 years your time suffering in flames. Give me 1,000 euros and it's yours. So selling better conditions after your death. Yeah. This is not in the Bible. This is not Jesus's idea. So this was a kind of corruption going on, and people were very angry about this. Also, corruption in the church. The bishop said, "Oh well, I have a job here. It's a very well-paid job. I'm going to give it to my son." Presque toujours des fils illégitimes, parce que en principe, ils n'avaient pas d'enfants, les évêques. En pratique, c'était pas si rare. There was also, in some areas, not everywhere, but in some areas, it was quite extreme. Il y avait des couvents qui étaient connus pour être des maisons closes. It could be quite extreme. It could be quite extreme, yeah. Normally, if you go into a convent, you think you're kind of safe. No, I'm sure that yours wasn't. Okay. Very, very important. Oh, sorry. So, for a personal relationship with God, that is essential. The old method is I talk to the priest, and the priest talks to the bishop, and the bishop talks to the pope, and the pope talks to God. That's the old Catholic idea. Which is still a little bit the case today. I don't know if it's the same in France. I'm a Catholic. I was brought up as a religious Catholic. And in my family, we didn't read the Bible. Yeah, in England, Catholics don't read the Bible. If you want to know what's in the Bible, you go to talk to the priest. Yeah. Whereas the Protestant idea is every individual can read the Bible, should read the Bible, and you have an individual relationship with God. So this is, in a way, a little bit democratic. You have the individual relationship, not through the hierarchy. And because of this, the priest is not so important. You have priests in Protestantism, d'accord, des pasteurs en français, mais bon, des officiers, but they're not so important. So, for example, the Protestant priest does not wear all the coloured clothes that the Catholic priest wears. And the coloured clothes are important because they show the priest is different. For example, the Catholic priest does not get married. Why does the Catholic priest not get married? To show that he is different from the rest of them. Whereas the Protestant idea is they're not different. They're a little bit the same. One particular idea, which I'm going to explain, there are more, but these are typical, is the idea of transubstantiation. Now, transubstantiation is a wonderful idea. It's a very simple idea, and many people were killed because they believed or did not believe in transubstantiation. And so today we say, well, how can they be so stupid as to die for something so little? But it was very important to them. So what is transubstantiation? It's very simple. Perhaps you know that in the Catholic Mass, you have bread and wine. And at one moment in the Mass, the priest goes... and in the Catholic ideology, after this moment, it is not bread, it is the body of Jesus. It is not wine, it is the blood of Jesus. So this is transubstantiation. Sa substance a été transformée. Now notice that in the Catholic theology, this is not symbolic. It is a real transformation. It's not symbolic yet that the bread has really become the body of Jesus. And the Protestants said, no, it's important, but it's symbolic. And that was the big conflict. Now why is that so important? Well, it's also about the priest. If the priest can make a miracle happen and transform bread into really the body and wine really into the blood of wine, then the priest is a very important person, chosen by God. You can't do it, I can do it, I'm a priest, I can do it, you can't do it, so I'm special. And so the Protestant idea, it's only symbolic, means the priest is not so important. So if the priest is not so important, then the Pope is not so important, and the individual relationship is important. So transubstantiation became an enormous conflict because it had behind it the whole idea of what religion should be. And in the same way, according to Catholic theology, when the Pope gives his opinion about theology, he is always right because his voice is the voice of God. And of course, just stay with us there, please. Thank you. Of course, the Protestants think that this is not necessary, that God talks to you individually, and so you don't need papal infallibility. You don't need this idea that the Pope is always right because the Pope has a direct link with God. So these are the important theological ideas, les idées théologiques, but they have social consequences because the new commercial classes, they like these ideas. Hierarchy, not so important. Individual, very important. The new commercial classes who have got money, but who want the world to change quickly, who want the king not to make all the decisions because we need to organize commerce, so we want a parliament. They don't want democracy because they only want a parliament with rich people, but a parliament to stop the king and the church deciding everything. So this is the reason they will become an enormous part of. This is a picture of what I was saying a moment ago, selling indulgences. These are pieces of paper to guarantee you better conditions of life after your death. Yeah, okay, there is a thing of the time. Yeah, he's selling indulgences. And you can see that it's a little bit of a criticism. Statue of Martin Luther. Again. Very, very here is the situation in 1560. Here is the situation of Protestantism in Europe. The yellow, the blue, and the grey these are all the different kinds of Protestants, and here are the Catholic countries. Catholic, Catholic, mostly Catholic, but with some Protestants. Catholic Ireland, and so on and so forth. In Scotland, the leader of the Reformation then was John Knox. So, I've talked about the situation of the church. Now I want to go back to the kings, and how did the kings fit into this story of a changing church, the rise of the commercial classes, the crisis in the Catholic Church, and the kings? And here they are. No, this is not the real ones. This is not the real ones, okay? So, the first king on our list is Henry VIII. He's the famous one, of course, the man with the fat man with a lot of wives. What he did is he came to a conflict with the church. What was the reason for the conflict with the church? The reason was that he didn't have a son. He wanted a son, and his wife could not give him a son, and so he wanted a new wife. And if you want a new wife, you need the permission of the Pope. Now, normally, the Pope would say, okay. It wasn't the first time. He had often said, oh, okay, divorce, sure, you're a king. Divorce, fine. So, but this time, because there was already a conflict between the king and the Pope said, no, you can't divorce. You can't have a new wife. And so Henry VIII took a very radical step, very surprising step. He declared that the English church was now separate and that he himself was the head of the church. Now, Henry VIII was not a Protestant. All the theological ideas which I just mentioned, Henry VIII did not agree. In fact, Henry VIII had written a book to defend Catholic ideas against the Protestants. But for political reasons, he separated the English church from Rome. And he became head of the English church. There were political reasons, because he needed a son. Economic reasons. Oh, I'm the head of the church. Look at all this gold in all these monasteries. And so from 1536 to 1541, he went for the dissolution of the monasteries. Donc les monastères qui avaient beaucoup d'or, entre autres choses. Et alors il a nationalisé les monastères. Hein. Oui, ça, tout ça c'est à moi. And he took all the gold. Now, this was not always this had negative sides as well. For example, they often burned the libraries. Souvent, ils ont brûlé les bibliothèques. Et les bibliothèques à l'époque, c'était beaucoup plus valable qu'aujourd'hui, parce qu'il n'y en avait pas beaucoup. Yeah, but so there was that side of it. There were some revolts against this idea. The Pilgrimage of Grace, donc littéralement le pèlerinage de grâce, en fait, c'est une révolte. It's a revolt against Henry VIII to defend the monasteries and to bring back the old system. It was not successful. So here you have the first episode of the Reformation, because Henry separates the church and he wants the English church, the church in England. Notez bien, il ne s'agit pas encore de the church of England, the church in England. He wants the same church, but without the Pope. However, when he has separated it, inside his new church, the people who, the traditionalists, they leave the country and they go to Rome. And the new bishops, his church in England attracts those bishops who have some Protestant ideas. So Henry VIII didn't want a Protestant church. But when he had a separate church, the Protestants became more and more powerful inside it. He dies, like kings do, you know, and everybody else, in fact, too. This is his house. You can go and visit it today. This is Hampton Court Palace. You can still go and visit this. And here you have there he is. This is the famous picture of him. Yeah? Yeah. Would you like to marry him?
No.
No, okay. There he is again. This is what was left. This is a remains of one of the monasteries after the dissolution. And the Pilgrimage of Grace, then, this is this rebellion. So it's a political rebellion and a religious rebellion at the same time. There you can see a little drawing of the Pilgrimage of Grace. Now, when Henry died, his son, he managed to have a son, was only, I think, 9 years old. And so he was a little boy. He was a little boy. And he was king for 6 years. So he became the head of the church. I'm going to have to shoot you, I'm afraid. Thank you. He became the head of the church. And he, of course, because he was a little boy, the most important people were his advisors, the people around him. And he had really, really Protestant advisors. So Henry VIII was not a Protestant, but Edward VI and his friends, they were Protestants, and they established a Protestant church in England. They took the church in England and they made the Church of England with different ideas. And in particular, here they made many reforms, but I want to give you two, just to help you along. First of all, the Book of Common Prayer. Now, the Book of Common Prayer is a very simple idea. It's the same prayer book in every church. Because this was a time, with Martin Luther and so on, in every church there were a few people, oh, maybe these Protestants have some good ideas. Oh, no, they don't. Oh, yes, they do. Big argument, yeah? And so, to stabilize the situation, Edward decided that in every church you have the same book, the same prayers, and so the same theology. The same theology. And secondly, he decided that priests have the right to marry. So a very important reform, priests have the right to marry, because that means the priests are really the same as you. They are not so magic. They marry like everybody else. So, you know, so it's a Protestant idea. There's the Book of Common Prayer. What is fascinating about the Book of Common Prayer is that many, many sections of this book are still used today in the Church of England. So it's a success as a book. Now, when Edward died, there was a conflict. Some people wanted a Protestant king or queen. And others wanted a Catholic. And in fact, there were no boys. Well, of course, he died when he was very young, so he didn't have any children. So the conflict was between Lady Jane Grey, who was a Protestant, and Mary, who was a Catholic. And both of them were linked by family, but they were not the daughters of Edward VI. And so somebody came to see Lady Jane Grey and said, would you like to be queen? She said, oh, yeah, yes, I'd like to be queen. And a few days later, the friends of Mary were more powerful and Lady Jane Grey had her head chopped off. Faites toujours attention quand les gens que vous connaissez pas vous proposent du boulot. Okay, right, so Lady Jane Grey was a bit of a tragedy. Hey, comme vous voyez de son nom, Lady Jane Grey, elle n'avait même pas le temps d'être couronnée. Yeah? Lady, not queen. So you can see that this was a very serious conflict because people were being executed. And in fact, Mary became queen. And again, very unlucky because she only was queen for only 5 years and then she died. She was not assassinated, she died after 5 years. So Mary was a Catholic and she wanted to return England to Catholicism. So she sent an email to the Pope, and she said, we are a Catholic country again. The priests who had married were obliged to leave their wives. Okay, the married priests must leave their wives. The link with Rome was re-established. Yeah, so it was like the old method again. And a whole series of heretics... ceux qui n'étaient pas d'accord, certains étaient brûlés au piqué, including Cranmer, je vais en parler dans un instant. Mary managed to get the agreement of the Parliament. Remember, the Parliament is not democracy, it's only rich people. but she got the agreement of the Parliament. How did she get the agreement of the Parliament? She said, I want Catholic ideas, I want the link with Rome. Mais tout l'argent que je vous ai, que mon père, que Henri vous a donné suite à l'ordre des monastères, vous pouvez le garder. Okay. So the monasteries and the lands are not restored to the church. This is very, very important because, first of all, this was the way she persuaded the rich people to accept Catholicism. And secondly, it meant that although the Catholic ideas came back, the economic power of the church did not come back. And so, in fact, it was not going to last very long, this situation. Now, Mary, then a Catholic, and as you probably know, in England, at the end of the story, the Protestants won and the Catholics lost. And so Mary has a very bad reputation, and she's always known as Bloody Mary. Comme on dit, tant que les lions n'ont, tant que les lions n'ont pas le historien, les livres d'histoire vont tout raconter du point de vue du chasseur. Okay, so the Protestants won, and so she has a bad time in the history books. Now, here is Thomas Cranmer. And Thomas Cranmer was a Protestant leader, and he was arrested by Mary's people, and they said to him, he was an archbishop, yeah, a top right, an archbishop, and they said to him, and they said to him that they have to, that he has to recant. That is, they said, okay, you're a Protestant, now sign this piece of paper to say Catholicism is correct and the Pope is wonderful. And he didn't want to sign it, so they tortured him, and so he signed it, yeah? And so he signed this document. And what they decided, so that they were going to execute him, but they decided that because he had changed his mind, he had become a Catholic again, they said, before we execute him, we're going to bring him to the church in Oxford and allow him to tell everybody that he was wrong, Protestantism is bad, Catholicism is wonderful, etc. This was the idea. So it was a political meeting that Mary and her friends said, okay, we're going to execute him, but first of all, we want him to tell the world that Catholicism is good. Propaganda, yeah? Unfortunately, when Archbishop of Cranmer came to the church, he said, I apologize for signing these documents, and I now want to give you my real opinion. The Pope is the Antichrist. Yeah. So publicly, in the biggest church in Oxford, Archbishop Cranmer said, the Pope is the Antichrist, and I renounce him. And this hand, which signed the documents, I want this hand to burn first before the rest of my body, because it is a shame to me. And so he was indeed burnt at the stake. There he is, being burnt. And you can see he's putting his hand out to burn his hand first. Here is another drawing from the time of people being burnt at the stake because they are Protestants. And this particular story, apparently it's true because we have several versions. This is that one of the women who was being burnt was pregnant, and her baby was born. And then they threw the baby back into the fire. But the baby was born, they threw the baby back into the fire. See, it's Stephen King, huh? See, it's not fair. So, let's say that the temperature of debate was very high. You need to remember that in this period, this is still the period where if you steal a sheep, you can be executed. Yeah. Life is not very valuable. And also, this is a time when, of course, religious conceptions were extremely important to people. People saw people dying every day for reasons they didn't understand, because medicine was not very advanced. And so the power of religion was extremely strong. Now, here you get the accident. Here you get the accident, because after 5 years, Mary died. Now, if Mary had not died after 5 years, but continued for 30 years, maybe she would have stabilized a Catholic England. Not very easy, because the Catholic Church didn't have the economic power it had before. But in any case, she died after 5 years, and Elizabeth came to power in 1558. And she was lucky. She was there for 50 years. So she had the time, more than 50, yeah? No, almost 50. She had the time to stabilize the situation. And she stabilized the situation by compromise. There were many different ideas. This time, many, many different ideas. More and more debates going on. And Elizabeth's idea was compromise. So what you had in this situation was a small number of Catholics who were kind of secret, you know, and didn't talk about it too much. It was dangerous. A lot of people in the Church of England with quite a variety of ideas. Over here, a section of people who thought that the Church of England was not Protestant enough. Yeah. Now, inside the Church of England, you have a debate. You have over here people who are close to the Catholics. We don't like the Pope, but we like the Catholic ideas. And over here, you have what we call the Puritans. And the Puritans are Protestants who want to reform the Church of England. They think that the Church of England is not Protestant enough, but they are inside the Church of England. Outside the Church of England, you have the dissenters. Alors, il faut faire attention parce qu'on dit souvent que des puritains sont allés aux États-Unis fonder des colonies. Pour être strict, on ne devrait pas dire puritans, mais dissenters. Ce n'est pas des gens qui voulaient réformer l'église de l'Angleterre, c'est des gens qui trouvaient que ça ne servait plus à rien, il fallait des nouvelles églises. Donc ici, you have dissenters. So, a big variety. So, how did she stabilize the Anglican Church? First of all, she made attending Anglican services obligatory. Every week you must go to church, to the Anglican Church, and if not, you must pay a fine. Yeah? So, to stop people from organizing elsewhere. Secondly, she reintroduced a new book of common prayer, that is the same prayer book for everybody. So again, to stabilize this, to stop debates. And finally, the 39 articles. Now, the 39 articles, ce sont les 39 articles de la foi qui sont encore en cours à l'Église d'Angleterre aujourd'hui, une série d'éléments. What did Elizabeth do with the Catholics? Well, sometimes she allowed them to exist and sometimes she repressed them. Because there was also a political problem. England's big enemy was Spain, and Spain was Catholic. So in England, people imagined, sometimes correctly, that the Catholics were friends with the country's enemies. So it became a political problem. When the conflict with Spain got more important, then it became illegal to be a Catholic priest. The repression got fiercer. But also on the other side, the dissenters, they were also repressed. When I was at school, at a Catholic school, not a private school, a public Catholic school in Britain, they used to tell us all the stories of the Catholic martyrs. Because Elizabeth burned a few Catholics. There's Elizabeth. The 39 articles. And here are a few of the people that they told me about in school. These are wonderful people who were burned by the nasty Protestants. Edmund Campion. And in fact, when we were young, we used to get us to sing a hymn and cantique. And the text was, "How sweet would be thy children's fate if they like them could die for thee." Et c'est une chanson qu'on chante et on dit, qu'est-ce que ce serait doux si je pouvais mourir pour vous comme l'ont fait les martyrs. On avait 7 ans, on est là. Oh là là, c'est obligatoire ce truc. It was really kind of scary. Yeah, kind of scary. Et en plus, c'est la musique, c'est How sweet would be that? Je veux mourir brûlé. J'exagère un peu. John Southworth, then, these are the Catholic martyrs killed by Elizabeth. Okay, so finally, eventually, nevertheless, Elizabeth did die, and James the First came to power. James the First is important for another reason, that this is the time when, for the first time, England and Scotland had the same king. James the First was James the Sixth of Scotland, James the First of England. So for the first time, England and Scotland had the same king. They were not yet the United Kingdom, but they had the same king. It's a beginning. James's reign had two aspects to it. First of all, increasing conflict with Parliament. The Parliament has only rich people in it, but more and more the Parliament represents the new commercial classes who have money. They have some land, but land is not the most important. Money is important, commerce. They want new laws, new freedoms. They don't like, they're not great fans of the church because the church doesn't pay taxes. And so on. So increasing power of Parliament, conflict, and regularly, il faut se rappeler qu'à cette époque, le Parlement ne siège que quand le roi lui demande de siéger. But on the religious side, there were two very important dates. First of all, in 1603, the Millenary Petition, donc c'est une pétition qui avait mis signataire. C'est pour ça que ça s'appelle the Millenary Petition. And the Millenary Petition said, we want more Protestantism. That was the idea. The Millenary Petition was signed by 1,000 priests, and they said, the Protestant reforms have not gone far enough. We want more Protestantism. And for example, the Protestant Millenary Petition said, look at this, the wedding ring. If you look in the Bible and you look for information on wedding rings, you will find nothing at all. It's not in the Bible. And so the Millenary Petition, shut up, the Millenary Petition said, we don't want any more wedding rings. We want to abolish wedding rings because they're not in the Bible. And also, we want to abolish special clothes for priests, because priests are not so important. So the Millenary Petition was a petition to ask for more Protestantism in the Church of England. Those are just two examples, yeah, of course. James received the Millenary Petition and he said no. No, he did not follow this. But he did make one very important reform from 1604 to 1611. He requested a new translation of the Bible. He requested a new Bible in English. Remember, previously the Bible is in Latin. If the Bible is in Latin, really, the priest can read it, but most people can't. If the Bible is in English, some people in every village can read it. So an important Protestant reform, the King James Bible. And also, it has to be said, he got some of the best writers in the country. And even today, the King James Bible is a very beautiful text. Very, very beautiful text. And we have a picture of it here. Yeah, at His Majesty's special command. And this is a later edition of the King James Bible. James has 20 years, 1603 to 25, with the rising conflict with Parliament. And his son, Charles the First, will first of all try to take more and more power for the king and less power for Parliament. And this is what we call the rise of absolutism. Everything is decided by the king. And because he has this idea, everything is decided by the king, like in France at the time, or partly because of this, Charles becomes more, he is the head of the Church of England, but he has more and more Catholic ideas. And so, for example, he stops the repression of Catholics And secondly, he marries a Catholic. And so the people of England, and especially the commercial classes, are very worried. If the king is getting close to Catholic ideas, this means he will want an absolute monarchy like in France, and the commercial classes will get nothing, and everything will be traditional and old-fashioned. And so the conflict between Parliament and king is a conflict about religion, but also about what kind of society they want. There is King Charles I. The king decided he didn't really need parliaments. He could make the laws on his own, so he dissolved the parliament. For many years, there was no parliament. But eventually, he needed money, so he was obliged to call the parliament again, and the parliament began to protest. And so one day, King Charles arrived in person with some soldiers, and he said, "I have come to arrest the five people who criticized the king the strongest. Where are they?" Of course, they had already gone. Yeah. And he was not able to arrest them. And after that day, the parliament voted, said, what we want soldiers in front of the parliament to protect us from the king. Now, this is the beginning, intellectually, this is the beginning of civil war. In theory, the job of the parliament is to help the king to govern. So if the parliament needs soldiers to protect the parliament from the king, then this is the end of the old system. And indeed, a year or so later, Charles will go to Oxford and will send out messages, "Come to Oxford to join the army of the king, and we're going to fight against Parliament." And this is the Civil War. Now, the Civil War was very bloody. There you have more or less the up and down of it, yes. 1642. The red is the king's people, and the green is the parliament's people. Yeah, 1646. So you can see the parliament wins. It's very, 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 very bloody. Very, very bloody. The other very important thing is that there are many new ideas. Some people call this the English Civil War. Other people call it the English Revolution. Because what happens is that we have no king. Yeah? At the end of this... people realize they have no king. The parliament is fighting the king. And this leads to enormous debates. What kind of society do we want? And because of the nature of the society at the time, these are religious debates. The people who support the king say, we need traditional hierarchy, the priests are important. And the people who are against the king say, let's look in the Bible. Let's see what we can find in the Bible. Now, the wonderful thing about the Bible is there are a lot of different things in there. You can have more or less whatever you want. Yeah. So a whole number of groups grew up which were very radical indeed. For example, the levellers. The levellers say, "Oh yes, this is good. We don't have a king. We don't really need an aristocracy either. Yeah, let's have democracy." Yeah, and the levellers defended democracy, which at the time was considered to be, by many people, completely crazy, dangerous communism. Yeah. The levellers. Now, in order to win against the king, the parliament was obliged to form a new army. And they formed a new army. See, the old army was, okay, you're the army. Is anybody here an aristocrat? Yeah. Okay, you're the bosses. So that's the traditional army. The new army said, okay, who is the most skilled at military? Who has the most military knowledge? You're the bosses. Very modern. It's better from the point of view of war. However, inside the army, groups like the levellers were very democratic. So, for example, they elected their officers, les officiers étaient élus à un certain moment, and they obliged the leader of the army, Oliver Cromwell, to have a big debate about what kind of society we wanted. Ça marche plus aujourd'hui si vous êtes dans l'armée et vous exigez que les généraux débattent avec vous de quel genre de société on veut. So he's le pain marché. So this is very important, because today, if we look at a country far away, we say, here's the parliament, here's the army. We think, oh, the parliament is for democracy and the army is against democracy. At this time, it's exactly the opposite. The parliament represents only the rich, and the army is ordinary people, and they are defending democracy. They oblige Oliver Cromwell to debate at Putney. The Putney debates, les discussions à Putney, are a moment when you have these tremendous debates about what kind of society we want. They capture the king, and they decide, first of all, they want to compromise with him, but he runs away and tries to organize an army again, and so they decide to try him. They have a tribunal for the king. It's very difficult, because they say, you know, would you like to be a judge for the king? Oh, I'm very busy. Yeah, everybody is terrified. But they finally find some judges, and Charles I is executed. He is beheaded in 1649, I think. And for 11 years, we have the English Republic. Yeah? Yes, the England has not always been a monarchy. For 11 years, it was a republic. Now, at the time, they didn't say republic. They said commonwealth. Commonwealth. Donc, c'est similaire. République, républicain, chose publique. Commonwealth, richesse commune. This is the original meaning of Commonwealth. Okay, and so that will be for 11 years, various experiments with different kinds of government until the monarchy comes back in 1660. Le fils du roi redevient roi en 1660. But the king is invited to come back. He will never have the same power as before. One historian said, what has been written by the sword cannot be cancelled by the pen. Ce qui a été écrit par l'épée ne peut pas être annulé sur un bout de papier. So in fact, after 1660, again you have a king, but first of all, the king receives a salary from the parliament. Okay, so not much power. And secondly, a few years later, in 1688, when the parliament is not happy with the king, they sack him and choose a new one. Yeah. So after the Civil War, Parliament is absolutely boss, and the king will never again have the same sort of power. And of course, today we have a situation in England where the Queen has very little power indeed. Okay, that's enough for today. Have a good break. Next